I would like to say a few words first. How delighted I am to be in New Zealand. We lived for 20 years in Australia, which is very close to New Zealand, and we never came here. And my first impression was how very similar to England is New Zealand. And I'm very glad to be with you. And I would like to give the greetings to the Christchurch Lodge of the Blavatsky Lodge of London, and indeed of the whole of the English section. Now I'm going to speak to you, as Jack Patterson has said, about a vision. A vision that the ancient rishis, the sages of India, had, which they expressed through hymns, which they handed down by word of mouth from generation to generation, and which would have been lost to mankind had it not been taken down, written down, towards our own Christian era. First of all, for the benefit of those who may not know what are the Vedas, let me explain for a few minutes. The Vedas are a collection of four collections of hymns addressed seemingly to the many gods, who are really the many aspects of the One. A collection of hymns which reveal the thought, the vision and the civilization of very ancient India. The immediate question people ask is, how long ago? Now, according to the scholars, the Western scholars, it's about 1,500 years BC. According to the Hindus, it's possibly 20,000 BC. So you can see the gap in between the two ideas. Hindus do tend to exaggerate one way, and scholars do tend to exaggerate the other way. So possibly, let's say, 10,000 BC or a little bit nearer our era. It doesn't matter. It is the record of a great people struggling along the path that leads to the infinite, and then left for us a vision which has not been surpassed, and which gives us hope for the future, for humanity, and for that alone it is priceless. I'm going to use two or three Sanskrit words, and I beg your pardon. I want to use them because they are not well translated. And one of them is the word Rita. You find it here in the middle. I shall explain my chart later on. Rita is a little word which means a great deal, which has a lot, a profound conception. Now, it comes from a root which means to move. And through movement, to fit or arrange. And therefore, it means both activity, order, and law. And through movement, through fitting and arranging, adjustment, the law of what is proper, right, and in human terms, righteousness, truth, justice. All of these ideas are contained in this little word, Rita, which I have translated as cosmic order at every level. It even includes the level of the religion, the religious level, ritual, or rite, R-I-T-E. So Rita fundamentally concerns the process of world unfoldment in accordance with one basic law, which is the law of harmony or balance, the law which is inherent to the very foundation of the universe, as we shall see. The universe unfolds, according to the ancient rishis, in a strict order, according to law. All other laws of the universe being but the development of, and therefore being subordinate to, the one basic law, which is Rita, and which can be translated as a whole cosmic order. Now, all this is hinted at in the hymns, but only hinted at. One has to reconstruct the whole vision from references and hints and myths scattered throughout the collection. I have written in my book, The Vedic Conception of the Cosmic Order, The Dynamics of Manifestation, was developed from a vision reaching out to vast dimensions and arrived at by generations of seers. The vision itself embraces a wide domain of activities, cosmic, natural, human, showing insights into the laws governing the universe and the gods and man's role in the universe. These insights range from the rishi's speculation as to the origin of creation, the orderly unfoldment of the universe, its various kingdoms and various beings, to the unfoldment of humanity and the social ethical rules that govern humanity and that are the very mirror of the cosmic order. Now, from the hymns of creation, there are a collection of hymns of creation in the Rig Veda, which is the oldest of the four collections of hymns. From these hymns, we realize that the rishis thought of the universe in terms of a projection from within, without, a letting out, an outflowing into manifestation of that which is latent, that which is completely hidden within. And this unfoldment seems to be expressed in three levels. So you have first the primordial or transcendental level, where Rita, the cosmic order, appears as the one law which underlies everything else. I call it, in modern terminology, the blueprint of divine manifestation. And then you have a second level, the intermediate level, where the gods manifest. Now notice, the gods manifest at the secondary level. Therefore, there is one absolute, hidden beyond everything else. The gods demarcate, shape the phenomenal world. At that level, we find the dynamics of the cosmic order. And then you have the third space-time phenomenal world, which is the world of humanity, where man disrupts the divine equilibrium. So we're going to have a look at this unfoldment. I'll have to do it very, very succinctly because it's a magnificent vision, but I can only give you a few hints with quotations. No, but if I could look at it, see it a little bit, because I've forgotten what I put there. Yeah. See here, the absolute, the great deep, the waters of space. This is the transcendental level. Now, this morning I talked about the absolute, the oneness, the darkness, the emptiness, the no-thing, because we know nothing about the absolute. Now you meet that in the Vedas. And to give you a taste of how they expressed it, let me read you three verses from the famous hymn of creation. It starts like this, going back to the origin. The unmanifest was not then. All the manifest. Spatial depth were not. Nor heaven beyond. What encompassed? Where? Who nurtured it? What ocean profound, unfathomable, pervaded? Death was not then, or immortality, neither nights nor days confined existed, undisturbed, self-moved, pulsated, the one alone. Breathless. And beyond that, other than that, was naught. Darkness there was. At first, hidden in darkness, this all was undifferentiated depth. And then comes the spark of life, and wrapped in voidness, that which flame power kindled to existence emerge. Desire, primordial seed of mind, in the beginning arose in that. Now this is the great hint of creation. I've only quoted the first three stanzas. But I would like to emphasize that ultimate oneness is a characteristic of the Rigvedic vision of deity, which until now was disregarded by Western scholars. All issues from the one and develops in accordance with the one law, which itself is rooted in the one. Now you have here the guarantee of the one origin and the one end. All comes up from the one, all returns to the one. And you have certain verses, which I'm going to read. That which is one has developed into the all. One whole governs the moving and the stable, that which walks and flies, this variegated creation. So this proves that the rishis of ancient India had risen in their meditation, contemplation, to the highest, to the loftiest level of vision that mankind has ever reached. They left the absolute at that high level, and that which linked the absolute to the created, to manifestation and to man, was the divine flame, the flame divine, which creates, which preserves, and which destroys, and brings back all things to the absolute. Now here we meet the word tapas, again, another Sanskrit word which is of utmost importance. It is through tapas. What is tapas? Psychologically, I like to think in terms of ourselves in order to understand something which is beyond ourselves. Psychologically, tapas refers to a specific kind of inner contemplative exertion, an intense spiritual focusing of the whole attention, the whole awareness, a contraction to an innermost point of dissolution and resolution. Dissolution of everything, and through this very dissolution, everything is resolved and brought back to life. A point of dissolution and resolution whereby the creative flame is aroused at the highest possible level of awareness. Now, at the physical level, the result is heat. And hence the word tapas from the root tap, to burn. It burns away. It burns you to illumination. It burns you to understanding. It burns you to creation. The bards, the ancient bards of the Vedas, in the creation hymn, use the analogy of yogic meditation to describe the divine creative action, a reflection of the intensity of their contemplation. So this creative energy, this flame divine at the highest possible level, was personified in Agni, the flame divine. There is a difference between the Absolute One and the Creative One, and this is hinted at in the hymn of creation. The Absolute is now stepped down to a level that we can conceive more easily. That is called the overseer. And then you have anthropomorphized deities such as Brahma and Varuna, and much later on you have Vishnu, Shiva, all those gods that you know of. But in the Rig Veda, the conception of the ultimate reality as an impersonal that, a simple that, on which there can be no speculation, is stepped down to a supreme masculine overseer who resides in the highest empyrean, who himself may not know the ultimate secret of creation, which is known only to the Absolute. And so you have the verse, the last stanza of the hymn of creation, which says, whence this creation originated, whether he caused it to be or not, he who in the highest empyrean surveys it, he alone knows, or else even he knows not. And this is how it ends. And so let us take the step further into manifestation. Another hymn of creation voices the conception thus: earlier than the heavens, earlier than this earth, earlier than the gods and the anti-gods, that indeed is. What is that seed primeval which the billowy deeps conceived, wherein all the gods appeared together? Again, the question, what is that seed which becomes the universe? In the beginning was evolved the effulgent matrix, and the Lord of Beings manifested, the one that was. He established this earthly and celestial realm. Now we see already the celestial realm and the earthly realm. But it is interesting to note how the ancient rishis divided the idea of the one. I have put here Aditi Daksha. Now Aditi is the mother goddess, but she represents space, what I have called the matrix, wherein all the universe come into being. And opposite is Daksha. Daksha represents divine intelligence, intelligence working upon or into space, out of which interaction, manifestation comes into being. And these two here, Aditi Daksha, who manifest at the highest level, are stepped down again into the idea of heaven and earth. And all are personified as gods and goddesses. You can see that they are conceptions, they are principles, they are powers, whatever we like to explain them as. Nevertheless, they are the two poles of manifestation which appear in all ancient cosmogonies, the mother, the father. Again, step down at a level which is more concrete for us into heaven and earth. The absolute, the divine flame emerging from the absolute as the one ray, the division of the one into two poles of manifestation, Aditi, Daksha, space, intelligence, and those two manifesting in a more concrete way as heaven and earth. Now, those who were at my lecture this morning will realize that it is exactly the same as the secret doctrine, except different words, slightly different conception. But the essence is the same. But there is something extremely important. As soon as there is manifestation, as soon as the first step has been taken through tapas, through the fire of creation, and the first seed of consciousness has been sown, we are told that cosmic order and truth were born of blazing tapas. Now, here's brought up a point of far-reaching importance in the Vedic vision, namely that order, harmony, balance, the blueprint of the cosmic order, and truth are imprinted at the very onset of manifestation, that truth and order are inherent to the very structure of the universe. Bear this in mind, cosmic order and truth were born of blazing tapas, of the blazing fire of creation. Our very world is based upon this order. The very center, the very source of our world is this cosmic order, which is the blueprint of everything. Everything that is going to unfold to produce a cosmos out of chaos will do so according to a pattern of order, according to law. And furthermore, not content with the mere word tapas, the Bard qualifies the word with the adjective or participial adjective blazing or inflaming, so that we have a superb image of the world blazing to incandescent manifestation as a result of the contemplation of God. What do you think of such a conception, such a vision? Right from the very beginning, this vision of incandescence becoming the universe according to law. Then the ocean deeps manifested, and of the ocean deeps was born time, ordainer of day and night, lord of all appearances. Time, lord of all appearances. Time imposes order, distributes everything in its right place. Time is the ordainer that shapes and images forth the stars and the heaven and earth. And you have an interesting verse which says, as of old, or as before, the Creator image forth the sun and moon, the heavenly, earthly, and the intermediate realms, and also the Empyrean, which means the highest heaven. But notice, as of old, which would hint at the doctrine of cycles, which is of course expressed in the secret doctrine. There have been cycles of manifestation before, and then cycles of inactivity, and then again cycles of manifestation. You've got this idea in this verse, as of all the creator emerge forth, the sun and moon, the heavenly, earthly, and intermediate realms, and also the Empyrean. Thence uprose the universe, thence the spheres, thence heaven and earth outspread. I cannot go into all the details, but I would like to mention just one thing which is of importance at this level. This is the interaction of the two, the positive, the negative, the centrifugal, the centripetal, the diastolic, systolic pulse of the universe. All these ideas are contained in Aditi and heaven, in Daksha and earth. Such an interaction implies a definite rhythm, a majestic movement, forming a pattern. And the pattern is the ordered cosmos, which results from the weaving of the father and the mother, the web thus woven being the universe, and the threads that form its woof, the laws of nature. Now, this is an image, obviously, that the Vedic rishis used. This orderly process that works according to the inherent law of being can be reduced to a fundamental rhythm. Diverging, converging, outgoing, coming back, withdrawing, out-breathing, in-breathing, diastolic, systolic, give, take. Now that's very important. Giving, taking. The sacrifice, which is the very essence of manifestation, is a vast giving that the beings that are born may take and then give back. Giving, taking. Out breathing, in breathing. And all this, which is fundamental to the universe, was expressed by the rishis in those very simple words. Weave forth, weave back. Between the father and the mother travels this whole universe. Actually, the word is moving world. So they knew that the world, our earth, moves on and on around the sun. So, the rishis conceived manifestation as a constant interaction of two polar opposites. And as every projection must by definition be inferior to its fountain source, because it is a limited expression in space and time of that source, the further or more outward the projection is, the more limited its expression, until we arrive at the absolute negation, through limitation of the absolute. Do you understand? At the highest level, the absolute, at the lowest level, the very opposite of the absolute. Here immortality, there death. Light, darkness, spirit, matter, infinite, finite, voidness, fullness, God, good, evil, and so on. Everything changes, everything moves, everything balances everything else, and therefore everything adjusts. And this is part of the law. And a very interesting little verse says, this is the law. Unto ye I declare it, O heaven and earth, the offspring on being born consumes his generators. Now, do we understand that? The law of becoming, of change, of evolution, the parents inherent in the embryo disappear, transformed in their offspring as the latter grows. So, in the process of generation of evolution in the vast course of Rita, the new constantly begets the new through the destruction of the old after it has been used and become old. What from the old is taken, what is necessary to make the new, and the new become the old, and out of the old the new is born, and this goes on and on and on. And here you have one of the very esoteric verses, being the son, thou becamest the father of the gods. And so, underlying the many appearances and disappearances of all things and all creatures is the one law of transformation, which activates, organizes, changes, and keeps in balance all opposing forces, all the tensions of the universe. All of this work and contribute to the unfoldment of the universe. Everything is in constant motion, but this very constancy of motion is itself the stability of the cosmic order. So you have motion and stability, the two opposites, meeting as one in the cosmic order. The cosmic order is both static and dynamic. Static in the sense of established. Nothing can alter the order of life, the rhythm of becoming, the motion of the planets, the recurrence of day and night, of the seasons, the ebb and flow of the tides. This is established. Nothing can order it. But it is dynamic in the sense that it is constantly on the move, being transformed, subject to birth, growth, death, decay. By law, the herds of the universe, which are the stars, which are the planets, which are the whole of the cosmos, have entered the cosmic order. And there is something very important here. The world order is the mirror of the harmony that exists between the essence of being and its outer activity. Now, how can we explain this? A thing will grow only in accordance with what is in its seed. The acorn will produce an oak tree, nothing else. The embryo, a human being, nothing else. So long as we ignite fire in the proper way, it will be kindled, because that is its nature. This is the law. Hence, fire is kindled in accordance with the law. The tides ebb and flow in accordance with the law. The sun rises, extends its light, and sets in accordance with the law. And the stars move along their orbits. The seasons come in their regular succession, all in accordance with the law. And consider this thought: to express one's innermost essence is to live one's truth. The universe is the expression of the divine truth. The universe cannot express anything else but the being of God. And Sat is the root of Satya, truth. And if we live our life in accordance with our innermost being, we express our truth. We express the truth of the universe. All this can be deduced from some of these verses. But let me give you one verse. To law belong the deep and wide heaven and earth, supreme milk cows, to law these pour out their milk. Now see how the imagery is being used. Heaven gives its essence, its luminosity, its spirituality. Earth gives us shelter, form. It is a field of experience for growth. Both of them act in accordance with their essential being, in accordance with the immutable law of the universe. Hence, compared to milk cows, what they do, they give their milk to the Supreme. This is a beautiful image. Firmly fixed are the foundation of the cosmic order. Shining in beauty, manifold are its beauteous forms. So, according to the Vedic vision, the whole universe is based upon the truth of the divine life. And this was summed up very succinctly in a verse from the Atharva Veda, which is the fourth collection of hymns. It says, vast truth, mighty order, consecration, spiritual exertion, tapas, another way of translating it, prayer, sacrificial offering, these uphold the earth. Notice our very earth is based, shaped, and maintained on a holy foundation. Here we see again the truth as the very breath of that eternal order, which breathed out the universe and will breathe it back to itself. For those, we have not much time to go into the details of the second level, but I would like to say just a few words. At the second level, we meet the gods. Here you have, below heaven and earth, you have the mid-region and you have the word, the devas. The devas are the shining ones, they are the rays, the principles, the paths, the energies behind all the phenomena of the universe. And they are those who shape, demarcate, and rule the manifested world. Their world on the whole is one of harmony. They show us the example of working in unison. In the billowy deeps of Aditi, of space, ye gods stood closely clasped. Then from ye, as though from dancers, hot dust was whirled away. We have here the vision of luminaries whirling in a cosmic dance as they take shape in the depth of the starry galaxies. At this level, we have an example of the working of the cosmic order through the regions of the universe. And I can only quote to you a few verses about the gods. One-minded, one-intentioned, they unerringly move together to the one purposeful accomplishment. Their task is to bring the whole of nature into harmony. And therefore, they are harmonious in themselves. There is, however, even in the Rig Veda, the idea of contention, conflict, a tension between two opposites, the two polar opposites of manifestation, the gods and what I have translated as the anti-gods. But this tension is not very strong as yet. It becomes much stronger in the writings of the Puranas later on. And I would like to read you just a little passage about the world of the gods. In the gods' realm, we catch glimpses of the human psyche's reaction to the wonders of nature. We are caught back into the fountain source of our roots, our own psyche, there where our bond with nature is at its strongest, For through the millennia, psyche has grown nurtured by those divine principles which are themselves the fashioners of nature, which psyche projected and anthropomorphized into the figures of the gods, who in the Vedas appear as the bright gods of the Vedic firmament, sons of the infinite, herdsmen of the supreme law, whose decrees are truth, who rule the cosmos in their perfect innocence, goodness, and so on, long before the human mind degraded them to its own petty level, a degradation which is already apparent in the epics and in the Puranas, which are other scriptures, later scriptures of India. One is the mighty godhood of the Shining Ones, one. Notice this oneness coming again and again. The gods revel in the sacred song of the cosmic order. Notice the poetry, the sacred song of the cosmic order. The cosmic order is the song of the divine. It is the expression of the workings of the gods. And we as man should be working in unison with the devas. This is the great lesson that the devas are giving us. Finally, one last verse concerning the devas. Blessed is all that the devas regard with favor. And so we come to the third level, man, where there is the utmost disruption. Opposition to the working of the law is set up by human agency through ignorance, wrong choice, and sometimes sheer ill will. This brings an aspect of Rita which is peculiar only to its relation to humanity, that is, the law of righteousness as reflected in the socio-ethical ritualistic side of human life, which includes religion. Religion is man's response to what he can grasp of the one universal law and its ramifications at every level. So, just as Rita, or the cosmic order in its universal connotation, is the law that brings order out of chaos and creates harmony, so in its ethical aspect, it governs man in the same way. To follow the norms of Rita is to create order in human relationship. That order mirrors the cosmic order. Truth, integrity, righteousness, these are the human expression of universal harmony. Hence, human integrity is the foundation upon which rests all ethics and is itself the mirror of the cosmic order. And this shows how we reflect in our life this cosmic order, reflect or distort. Now, Rita is the Vedic expression of the law of action and reaction. They did not use the word karma. The word karma had a different meaning, but they had this idea. For example, I'm quoting, sinners are false and untruthful. They dig their own deep ditch. Retribution dogs the wrongdoings of men. So Varuna discerns truth and falsehood prevalent among men and punishes the wrongdoer. Man's transgression is considered a debt which he contracts at the hands of the guardians of Rita, those guardians being the gods, the administrators of the cosmic order. So you can see that the root idea of karma, which implies the setting right of any wrong action, the bringing back into harmony, is contained in the conception of universal harmony. And inasmuch as Rita stands for harmony and orderly process, the right working of all things, the inherent law of nature, the basis of manifestation, so its opposite, Anrita, is said to be punished by the gods. So we have here already the conception of action-reaction. And it is stated, sweet blows the breeze for the righteous one, sweet flow the ocean deeps. Now I would like to read to you just an excerpt from my book concerning man. The third level of the Vedic vision of Rita shows us puny man confronting himself, his possibilities and his limitations, his aspirations and hopes, his inadequacy and his complacency, his humility and pride, his hopes and despair, his fears and joys, suffering and exaltation, self-betrayal and doubts, his revolt and his submission, his realization of his inherent freedom and power to know, and his claim to his divine birthright to choose freedom. In a word, his role in the vast scheme of the universe in which he finds himself, seemingly caught up for better or worse, as though in the cogs of an ever-revolving wheel. And puny man, through this very facing, finding and accepting of himself, comes out magnified. In the Rig Veda, man appears as the epitome of the darker side of the cosmic order. For he stands at that stage where conflict prevails, prior to that further stage which the Deva commands, where harmony has been achieved, and the tension between the polarities resolved. But man has it in himself to become the epitome of the lighter side of the universe by integrating himself in the cosmic harmony. Integration, integrity, truth, oneness. To this end, the sacrificial ritual, which was very important in those days, was established by the patriarchs as a religious institution that mirrored the cosmic order and necessitated man's active participation. And by the way, there was no human sacrifice and very little animal sacrifice. It did come, animal sacrifices did come more and more and did become more numerous later on, but originally the sacrifice was the soma, plants, and mixed up with milk and ghee, butter. Now, sacrifice was considered, the sacrificial ritual was considered the most effective means of impressing on man the meaning of the cosmic order in a concrete and dramatic form in which man himself could play a vital role. In this enactment of the original sacrificial act of creation, there was built up a relationship between terrestrial man and those divine powers he invokes and seeks to serve. There was started an interaction that mirrors the interplay between the two main poles of creation, the positive-negative spirit-matter, father-mother, the eternal rhythm of the universe. The sacrifice was conceived as a universal process to which all things are subservient, an eternal give and take, which is life. This, at the lowest level manifests as what appears to us as a constant praying, P-R-E-Y-I-N-G, a constant praying, the law of the jungle, of competition, of the strongest, at the highest, as a constant self-gift, the law of self-oblivion, self-offering, the way to the transcendent, the way to freedom. Now it is interesting to note that Indra, the great god of the Rig Veda, is said to have found for man the way to fulfillment through conflict. And those who know the esoteric doctrine of the rays, the fourth ray of harmony through conflict is specifically human. And you've got this here in the Rig Veda. He gave man the way, he showed man the way to fulfillment through conflict. Struggle is necessary for any achievement. By eventually uniting in himself all his fragmented parts into one whole, man becomes the perfect mirror of the cosmic whole, which he contains potentially within himself. Now this keynote of his search and its result, the bursting of man from his bonds and the call to freedom, is beautifully expressed in a hymn of the Atharva Veda, which says, open yourself, create free space, release the bound one from his bonds, like a newborn child freed from the womb, be free to move on every path. What do you think of this call to freedom? And to end, we have seen this mighty vision that covers the whole of the universe from the absolute, the highest, on which there can be no human speculation, to the secondary level, the cosmic dynamic of the universe, to the third level, the human, where the human race is struggling to achieve the harmony that has been achieved by the gods. Which shows to us that this world, here and now, is the playground of a multitude of experiences that forge man's soul. It constitutes the path to the infinite. But the Vedic bards gave a further vision to those who had achieved or would achieve this integration, this truth of their being. And this is one of the most esoteric verses of the whole collection. It says, seven landmarks have the wise established. For one of them may the troubled mortal set out, thence liberated from the path, verily a pillar of life, he stands on firm foundation in the abode of the Most High. Now this is the Rig Veda, it's my translation, but I'm going to read from Revelation, just a line. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. Isn't it similar? Both the Rig Veda and Revelation give point to a pilgrimage, the goal of which is the abode of the Most High, whence there is no more going out. Now this superb vision of ancient times has been kept hidden in the Rig Veda for 2,000 years. And now that we have discovered it, we can say in all truth, it has never been equaled and it has never been surpassed. It is still there to give us hope for our humanity, to take us along the path of divine harmony back to our source, which is the very essence of the harmony that is in the universe and in ourselves. And to end, let me quote a song of divine illumination. I have known this mighty celestial being, refulgent as the sun beyond the darkness. Only by knowing him does one overcome death. No other way is there to go.